to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
We've been exploring the very difficult issue of evil and suffering. Why does God allow it? And what on earth is he going to do about it? Last night I reflected on a very important difference between the approach to suffering in Buddhism, Islam and atheism and the approach found in the Bible. The Bible says it's okay to question God, to cry out to him, why God? Psalm 22 does just that in its opening line. It says, my God, why have you forsaken me? The God of the Bible invites us to approach him with our doubts and frustrations, which is just as well because there have been numerous times through the years when I've wanted to say to God, why? What are you doing? I don't understand. One of my very good friends growing up was an amazingly enthusiastic bloke named Chris. He and I would often spend afternoons sitting up the back of the grandstand at our local soccer oval, plotting our world takeovers. I was going to play soccer for Australia, and he was going to be a great athlete. Now, obviously, I failed in my ambition, but he very nearly achieved his. After high school, he devoted himself passionately to running. He moved to Kenya, where he worked as a PE teacher and trained under a former marathon champion. He made intermittent trips back to Sydney, and on one of his trips, we caught up for coffee, although I think he had some vegetable milkshakey thing, but anyway, we talked about old times, and of course we talked about running and his ambition one day to make it to the Olympics. I'd never seen him so driven and seemingly invincible. He returned to Kenya shortly afterwards, and within months, he was dead, found clothed in his bed, alone in his Nairobi flat. On the face of it, it appears as if Chris might have ended his own life in a massive drug overdose. A huge cocktail of drugs was found strewn across the coffee table in the living room. Other factors suggest otherwise. Chris had had a Kenyan girlfriend whose brothers were less than impressed with their sister going out with a white boy, and this caused some friction. In addition, the brothers were involved in the Nairobi drug trade, and Chris had been quite protective of his girlfriend against them. This, combined with the fact that Chris was known to have been in good spirits at the time, makes the conclusion of suicide problematic, especially since evidence in the flat indicates that Chris had had visitors that evening. The evidence was noted but not deemed significant by the local authorities. Chris's friends and family will probably never know the truth, though his mum and dad are adamant that he was murdered. Whatever the truth about Chris's tragic death, it hardly needs saying that so much of the suffering experienced in our world results from human decisions, from the potent reality of our will. I'm thinking about the bloodshed and injustice in East Timor, the ongoing terrorism and reprisals in the Middle East, or closer to home, the thousands of muggings and rapes and murders reported every year in Australia. And of course, I'm thinking about my mate Chris. Less dramatically, I'm thinking about the way I find it so easy to spend $30 on another CD and so difficult to spend the same amount on relief for the developing world. Somehow, for all the wondrous glimpses of goodness I see in society, there remains for me the unmistakable stain of selfishness, violence, and greed. Without giving us precise details, the poet who composed Psalm 22, which I quoted earlier, puts part of his suffering down to the tyrannous power of the human will. In the rather unflattering language of an oppressed person, the poet describes his attackers as animals. Let me read from Psalm 22. Many bulls have surrounded me, strong bulls of Bashan encircle me. Roaring lions tearing their prey open, their mouths wide against me. Dogs have surrounded me, a band of evil men has encircled me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. The propensity to injustice, violence, and pride, so evident in these words, has marked human culture for as long as anyone knows. In fact, according to the biblical account, the arrogance of the human will found expression in the very first human beings. The argument of the Bible's opening chapters is very clear. In striking language, Genesis 1 to 3 makes the point that human beings, from the very beginning, misused their divinely sanctioned independence as rational beings and sought to become autonomous, that is, a law unto themselves without reference to the Creator. The center of this beautiful yet tragic story puts it this way, and I'm going to quote from Genesis chapter 3, verse 6. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. And so began the long and tortuous story of the human will. Men and women, made in God's image, defy their Maker for an imagined personal gain. When you think about it, this first act of defiance is played out every day in the lives of every one of us. Every time we tread on someone else to get where we're going in life, every time we withhold resources from the poor, every time we pursue some illicit pleasure instead of marital faithfulness, every time we retaliate when threatened, and so on. And the result of this use of the will? Well, a society scarred by the tyranny, betrayal, poverty, and violence that we see around us. But all of this raises a question for some. Why doesn't God simply override our wills when we aim to cause harm or offence to others? Why doesn't he stop the pain by stopping us acting with our wills? Surely, as the God of all the world, he certainly has power to do this, doesn't he? Why doesn't he just step in and stop us making evil and destructive choices? Well, the best way to respond to this question is with another question. If God did step in to bend our wills every time we mistreated one another, what sort of world would we be living in? Would it be a better place? Now, at one level, the answer would, of course, be yes. We wouldn't be fighting each other. We'd be generous and so on. But at the more profound level, the answer has to be no. If God intervened each time a crook pulled the trigger of a gun, every time a husband thought of betraying his wife, every time a woman withheld money from the poor, or any other large or small ill-intentioned act of the will, would this improve our quality of life? Only at the superficial level. If God did consistently impose his will over and against our own will, wouldn't we be accusing God himself of tyranny? Except, of course, a God like that wouldn't let us think such thoughts. If God controlled our will so that we were unable to decide anything for ourselves, it would reduce human dignity to that of a computer or a robot, something that is pre-programmed with no expression of its own. The Almighty would indeed have a world of peace and harmony, but we ourselves would have no quality of life to speak of. We wouldn't be truly living. Now, I don't know why God let my mate Chris die in such sad circumstances, but I do know that God has not made us to be robots. He has given us a will, and for better or worse, we use that will with significant effect. Maybe you've experienced firsthand the cruel power of the human will. Go to God, tell him how you feel. Bring to him all your frustrations, just as Psalm 22 does. He is big enough for all your doubts. He's big enough for your questions. And he's certainly big enough to comfort you. There is so, so much more I want to say on this topic. So I hope you can join me in the next few nights.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.